B note. String 3 is a G note. Wait a second, I'm not giving a guitar lesson. This is a podcast. I forgot. My name's Mike, this is Mike in the Field, and I've got an acoustic guitar in my lap. Haven't played this baby for a little bit. And right now it's 5 a.m. about, and I'm watching the sun come up through this window here of this basement. And I got a lot on my mind. Everything's good. It's all good, folks. How are you doing? I miss you guys. Seriously, I miss you guys. Only thing I can do for you is put out this record on Friday on Tidal. You use Tidal for streaming? I like Tidal a lot. Tidal is cool. They pay the artist the most. And yeah. So this episode of Mike in the Field, I'm just spitballing here. This is just gonna be me for this episode. And we're gonna break down Resurrect track by track. Cause why not? We're in a pandemic. We got a podcast. We're chilling. Have you been vaccinated yet? I got my first shot. I teach music. I teach kids, you know. So I live in New Hampshire. I was covered in the K-12 population deal. What was it? Phase 2A or something like that. So got my second dose scheduled, and I feel kind of privileged and shitty because a lot of people aren't getting the shot that they need. And I'm worried that, we know that it's happening, that people are dying unnecessarily because of the way this thing has been rolled out. Oh, I don't want to get into this, man. It's too much. Let's focus in on the music. we're going to break down Resurrect track by track. But yeah, I'd like to actually talk about some personal stuff for a second, if you'd like to hear it. I got into a graduate school program. I was accepted into a graduate school program in New York City, Berkeley, NYC, for a songwriting and production master's program. It's a one-year master program. Now, I don't have a degree in music. I got my undergrad in business management because I was brainwashed as a child. Because I was brainwashed into thinking that I needed to go to school for business, even though I had zero interest. Or anyways, that's a whole other thing. So I've been accepted into this grad school program. I'd like to go in a lot of ways, you know what I mean? It's an amazing program that Berkeley has put together. They literally did this $14 million renovation on the Power Station studio in Manhattan, and that would literally be like where we study, right? So it's like, don't get too excited for me, or don't get too mad at me. I don't think I'm gonna go, to be honest. But if you wanna, let me talk about it for a second. So essentially, it's kind of an amazing program, and I wanted to hone my skills as a songwriter and producer and kind of be out of my own, you know, my own style and branch out and just experience working with other people who are super, super serious about making cool music happen. It seems like the right place to be to do that, right? So for whatever reason, Berkeley accepted me into this program. I had a great interview, and I was accepted, and I feel like, oh, okay. So I have real world experience. I write a lot of music. I've put out a lot of music. And I think they saw that, and that's really, really cool. And I'm super grateful that they accepted me. It's not a cheap program. I graduated college in 2009, right? When we had, you know, an economic fallout when the housing bubble burst, right? So right out of college, boom, here's a ton of debt. Here's some super high interest rates. Here's an economic depression and a degree that you didn't even fucking want. I know this is being, I'm not trying to be negative, you guys. Life is good. Actually, life is pretty shitty for a lot of people right now, let's be honest. But look, it's better to be realistic than to have your head, you know, where it is, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah. Anyway, so I have a little bit of tension and anxiety when it comes to looking at higher education and what its purpose really is. So, again, not complaining. I'm a music teacher. I'm a working musician. That's what I do. That's who I am. I thought Berkeley recognized that, right? They have my tax return for 2019 when I filed for my FAFSA and all that, right? Did all those things. Dotted my I's, crossed my T's and all that. And the financial VP, you know, bless her heart. It's nothing personal, but it's just funny. Like, I was like, I would love to go do this program. Maybe they'll give me some kind of scholarship, some sort of like merit-based scholarship. I know it's a very, very competitive program, right? I mean, it's Berklee College of Music. It's known throughout the world, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not trying to put myself on a pedestal. I just know how much money I make a year by being a working musician. And the letter I got from the VP of the financial, it was like, he goes, sorry, it's fucking hilarious to me. They're basically the same old, you know, exactly what you'd think. It's just like, you're amazing and we have all the confidence in you in the world, but we're not giving you a single cent. And then the best part was it says, if you're unsure of how to finance your graduate studies, here are some resources. You could use the internet. No joke. I'm paraphrasing, but they said, these are my solutions to finding financing. Like, use the internet or visit your local library. And yeah, so it's just kind of funny. I got a freaking kick out of that. Yeah. Anyways, that's what's going on with me. And it's sort of like, do I take out a massive loan given the state of the world and just sink myself with the hopes that I'll have employability in a year coming out of this program? I don't know. Is it a risk worth taking? I don't know. Is it a risk worth taking? Does it mean the end of fire in the field? It certainly means, a reduction, of how much we can do. It certainly does not mean the end necessarily by any stretch. There's still music that needs to come out, projects that need to be done, gigs that need to be played when we come back. Certainly does not mean the end of anything. It would just kind of be a little bit different, but you know, look what's happened in this last year. We had all these plans to go on tour, promote a record, boom, boom, boom. And here we are. I'm in a basement looking at the sun come up. It's actually really nice. But yeah, so send me an email, mike@fireinthefieldmusic.com. Should I go to grad school, take out a big ass loan, and go to grad school and at Berkeley, NYC? What do you think? Let's talk about it. Anyways, and so begins the tale of how this record came to be. So essentially, we've been, you know, before recording this record, we were playing live a lot every weekend, you know, just out there grinding it away, really just going for it and having a blast. But you know, it's not like we're making a ton of money. It's a lot of work, right? It's a lot of work when you already have a job and whatnot. Like, you know, every artist deals with this. I'm not unique to this, but anyways, so we have the studio time booked, and due to extenuating life circumstances, the drummer can't play. He's got to move away. The bass player can't play. He's got real life stuff to deal with. Not that he can't play at all. It's just, you know, well, if you don't learn the music, how are we going to record the music? Kind of shit. Oh, no, this is getting sad. But the sun's coming up. This is beautiful. No, it's not sad at all. It's a great story, I think, because it's about teamwork and coming together and persevering through, you know, what most artists face in bands is scheduling. Scheduling is sort of like the bane of existence. So I was like, nope, the studio time is booked. I'm not putting this off. The songs are written. We need to make this happen. So I was, you know, going through the tracks after kind of being faced with this, like, shoot, you don't really even have a band prepared to go into the studio. I think, you know, everyone got kind of burnt out from playing so much. So we looked at the track list, and on this record, like, you know, there's more quote unquote classic style, heavy metal sort of riff rock and roll stuff that we're more known for around here. And then there's some funkier, bluesier, singer-songwritery stuff that branches out stylistically. So much of that variation, I think, in the Fire in the Field sound now just comes from the fact that I get bored just playing, like, okay, we're a riff rock band. Let's just do that. No, like, everything needs to evolve. It needs to be constantly evolving. It needs to be constantly going to new places. If you stay in one place, it just gets sterile and weird, man. I don't know. It just freaks me out. So, yeah, that's what the sonic place, I think, is about, is like, keep it about evolution, right? So looking at the track list, I was like, we've got like half the record is like some pretty heavy, gnarly rock and roll stuff. And then the other half is like kind of all over the map. And then I was like, what drummers do I know that would be appropriate for this? And, oh, I just got a little goosebump feeling. Because I answered the question immediately in my mind. I was like, who do I know that would be like a good fit? And right away I was like, John Santarelli, who is, of course, a lot of, you know, he was one of my best friends. He's the guy that, you know, we founded the band together. John is the dude who came up with the name Fire in the Field back in the day when we used to be called Black Elephant. And this was a long time ago. We discovered there was this rap group out of Detroit that had this name, Black Elephant. They were badass and they were established out there. And so we were like, oh, we got to come up with another name. And we took, you know, months trying to figure it out. And Santarelli, boom, he nailed it. It was like, Santarelli is great at coming up with titles. I love you, John. I miss you, dude. You just kind of know, like, that staple sort of like gut bucket rock and roll. I was like, oh, Santarelli would crush these songs. I didn't know if he was going to be able to do it. And luckily at one of the places I teach at is kind of near his house. And they let me use a rehearsal space there after hours. And so John would come down and we'd run down these five tracks and just work through them. So he could kind of find his place, where the groove sat for him, you know, adjusted some speeds and stuff like that. He has his input. It's a collaborative process. You know what I mean? Like, I'll come up with riffs and lyrics and melodies and write a general song, but you want to work it with a band. If you want a live band feel, you have to let the players, I think, be inspired and bring their own thing to it. I think that's only right? That would be weird if I was like, can you play and if you don't do it like that, then that can't be the song. That would be ridiculous. It's gotta be, you know, it's called Fire in the Field for a reason. It's about a band. It's about players interacting. Anyways, it's early. So yeah, Santarelli to the rescue on Shadowway, Egyptian Jukebox, on Resurrect, which is the title track, on Walked on Water, and Stay Back Wolf. I'm honestly just playing a Root position, D minor triad with the root on string 5. And then I'm just letting the open strings ring out. That's open B and open E, right? So you've got the 6 and you've got the 2 in the key of D. Anyways, so in the drop D, I was playing that open D note and doing a little chukka and then hitting that chord. And then I'm grabbing. Stand back. No, this ain't no carjack. This is a Cadillac. Anyways, so that riff has that immediacy to it, that just like, it's funny when you write something like that, it doesn't feel like you write it, right? This is nothing new that I'm saying. This has been said a million times before by a million different musicians. It just feels like, where did that come from? Don't know. Not sure if I even care. I'm just glad that it's here and I'm going to be here for it and let it create itself in a way. I'm just be the channel, you know? And yeah, so that's where that one started, is with the first riff you hear is actually a little blip of the chorus, and then it drops, and that was the first thing I wrote for that. So yeah, and this one I think is pretty typical for writing a song, whereas like the next track I'll talk about is completely different process. But the process for this was really just what I just did right there, right? I wrote it on acoustic, and I would just groove out and not think about words. And I'd just be like, you know, and I just kind of like make some weird noises and try to find something. And then, you know, eventually like maybe a word would hit, just the sound might inspire some sort of line, even if it's just one line. Just take the one line and let that be the seed to it, right? I don't want to dive too deep into the lyrics, but I will say that the onset of American fascism that's bleeding into the far right of this country is 100% the inspiration for that. The next song, Egyptian Jukebox, honestly, completely unlike any song I've ever done, in that I didn't have a single melodic idea, a single lyrical idea until the entire thing was recorded. Really weird. And actually bands do it that way. And so for whatever reason, boom, the riff gods gave me that one. Da 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 da. I mean, I played that so many times to find where I wanted the timing to sit. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I did it. I can't tell you how many hours passed of me figuring that out. Probably too many. But literally, if you hear the song, I mean, there's a zillion sort of little variations and riffs. And that was, I wrote that completely, I think, on acoustic guitar. Just, you know, voice memos on my phone. Boom, up. I'm going to riff, you know, listen back. Yep. Okay, I'm going to piece that there. And so I literally just had this whole track of just pure riffage. And that was it. And I never had any sort of inkling of an idea of what it would be about. To the point where it was like, I'd never done that before. So I was worried like, oh shoot, like what if I can't come up with anything? Because it's such kind of a weird groove. And then I just started spitballing ideas, you know, in my mind. I was like, what's something that I could sink my teeth into and have fun with? It's a pretty, not, I think it is kind of a comedic in a way. For me, it is. I think it's kind of funny. Not in a good way, right? So yeah, I tapped into, you know, loving ancient Egypt as a kid, and that whole sort of like Western view on, you know, the stereotypical mummies and curses and all that. And did a little bit of, you know, research, like Wikipedia research, and just learning about all the crazy stuff that happened to the people who opened King Tut's tomb. And so I try to, you know, I'm fusing kind of like mythology and reality, I guess. In Egyptian Jukebox, lyrically, is kind of what I was trying to do, because I also have watched this documentary about what actually happened to King Tut. Like, why did he die so young, et cetera, et cetera. The reason he died so young, according to this documentary I saw, was actually because he was the product of incest, and he had, he was super, super immunocompromised, and he had some kind of brittle bone disease. And so he died from injuries from a fall. So he wasn't ever poisoned or anything like that. He was the product of incest, which is really disgusting, but it's also, so are his parents. You know what I mean? And that's another thing that was very interesting about the documentary, is you see those Egyptian statues where even the men, right, have those hips, right? They have a little bit of those curves. Yeah, that wasn't like an artistic license for the sculptor. That was literally them trying to depict these rulers who were products of incest, who were physiologically fucked up. So anyways, that's Egyptian Jukebox. All right, let's talk about Pump while I tune back up. Yeah, Pump. Pump is kind of a funny story, and this is where we should talk about Joe Beth. So Joe Beth is a dear friend and someone I've played in a band called Miss Fairchild with, a funk band, totally kick-ass, Prince-esque funk band out of Boston that I had a great experience playing in for years. Excuse me, years. I'm not crying. It's just early. And Joe Beth was one of the drummers that we played with a lot, and she's just like the sweetest person ever and a crushing drummer. It's so funny. It's like John and Joe Beth are like so complete opposite personality types. Like John and I, where we get together, we're very like, oh yeah, let's rock. You know, it's very like masculine time. And Joe Beth is just like so soft and so feminine and so like relaxed and calm. And then she just crushes her drum kit. And it's so fun to play with her like that. Miss you, Joe Beth. So, yeah. What are we talking about? We're talking about Pump. We're talking about Pump. Pump. How did I write the song? This is another one where I had Pump. I knew I wanted to go Pump. 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 I knew I wanted that. I didn't know what the pump was, you know. It's like, yeah, you can do the sex thing. That's cool. But it became more about like a song about, you know, the heart as an organ, but also the heart as like the spiritual heart, you know. It's sort of like that duality, I guess. And if I dare use that word right now. Oh, I just saw a really nice big ass bird flying. What the heck was that thing? Anyways, Pump. Yeah, it's kind of funny. A friend of mine is a film director in LA, and she made a documentary about pumping, because she had a baby, and you know, you pump your breast for breast milk, right, for your babies to get all the good nutrients. Anyways, yeah, this is really weird, but she made this documentary and she was looking for music for it, and unfortunately, I didn't write the song in time, because I think they finished it out before the song was recorded. Anyways, And so in a way, this notion of like, you know, breastfeeding came into that song. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's about that. I don't even know what it's really about necessarily. I want to move on from this one because I feel like I just ruined it by telling you about breastfeeding. Anyways, have you breastfed lately? How old are you, Bobby? What's the next track on this one? Boss Man. Yeah, Joe Beth played on Boss Man too. Boss Man is about, for me, a direct response to being completely exploited and lorded over by an employer. What was it? 2017. To the point where you just feel like you do everything you can to represent the company you're working for. You know, you're good. You do your work, man. You know, you show up and you do your best. And when that's not appreciated, that really is a feeling of disgust. You know, you really feel used. And yeah, so I felt used and abused for a job that, you know, wasn't, you know, helping me get health insurance or helping me really do much of anything but, you know, continue being a musician and continue the music life, right? And that's what a lot of these people will do, is they prey on you for being a musician. They prey on you. It's like, it's almost like, oh, well, you get to do music, so you don't need to get paid that much, right? Because it's fun for you. I hate my life and I hate my job, so I'm going to make your life miserable by being a fucking dick. So, yeah, I don't hate anybody in this world, but I really don't. I don't hate a single person, but fuck that dude. That song, Boss Man, is for you, you fucking dick. Hope your company is doing well. Seriously, I really do hope your company is doing well because, you know, people need to learn music. It's really important. But fuck you. That's what that song's about. All right. We Hunters. Yeah, man. I love this one. I had so much fun making it. It's such a weird, funky tune. And Joe Beth was so... It completely came at the groove in a way that I did not expect, you know, and the way she put it, the way she came in at the beginning, I was like, seriously? Like, that's so weird. I definitely never would have thought of that. Yes, let's go. Oh, I just got a little goosebumps right there. Boogity, boogity. Anyways. That was such a fun song to make and such a fun guitar solo to play. I remember sitting in Tony Hamoy's recording studio and we were just like geeking out, like dying laughing because it's just kind of ridiculous. But it was fun. It's like, finally, there's like a clean guitar solo on a Fire in the Field song, right? It's just like clean and sparkly. Yeah. We Hunters is certainly not about hunting animals, that's for sure. I would never hunt an animal. I think it's weird, to be honest. You know, hunt an animal if you're going to skin it and gut it and clean it yourself and eat, you know what I mean? Go hunting. If you hunt for sport, you know, like, I don't get it, dude. Whatever, you know. If it's controlling the deer population, okay, I guess I can live with that. But, yeah. I'm kind of wrestling with potentially going vegetarian. I really just haven't been craving meat, and I've been kind of grossed out, like eating a burger and looking at my dog and being like, hey, buddy, I'm eating one of, I don't know. It's just freaking me out, man. Anyways, We Hunters is not a song about hunting animals. It's more about like the same old shit that you deal with in your everyday life, right? Sex versus love, love versus sex. Where do they coincide? Where do they divert? You know what I'm saying? Anyways, was that the next track after Boss Man? Yeah, it was. I got no paper in front of me. I have no idea what I'm doing. The next track, Scandalous Lightning, Joe Beth also played on. And this is kind of like, wait. Is that the next track on the record? One, two, three, four, five. Yeah, Scandalous Lightning is number six. Cool. And yeah, I talk about what this song kind of is about in another podcast that will be coming out later that I did with Jared. So I'm gonna kind of leave that alone. But I will say that in terms of the music for this one, it's kind of funny because that the chorus part, which I don't know if I can remember it. Yeah, right. Guitar's a little out. Literally wrote that. I can't even tell you, like maybe 6-7 years ago, that chorus part, and never had any lyrics to it, nothing. It's just a piece of music that I really liked, right? And that's why it's so great to record yourself, so you don't forget good ideas, you know? Not that I'm like religious about trying to record everything. That's monotonous. I just record like the great moments, the moments that I'm like, oh, I wanted that, I want to make a song out of that, okay, record it, you know? Don't record everything unless you're trying to, you know, break down your technique or something like that. Anyways, so yeah, Scandalous Lightning is kind of funny in that that chorus part musically was written a long time ago. And I was like, man, I've always wanted to have that, like, sort of Black Crowes-y sort of ballad rock thing. Like, I want to have that, like, excuse me. I want to have that sort of, you know, I feel like so much of her lyrics are either, like, you know, borderline political and whatnot. But not a lot of Fire in the Field songs deal with, like, love, I don't think. And heartache and all, like a love, like between like a man and a woman or whoever, you know, man and man, woman and woman, whatever. I don't care. Whatever you do is whatever you do. I love it all. I think it's great. I think you're great. Seriously, be yourself, people. Be yourself. No one else can do it for you. You know what I mean? Anyways, so yeah, Scandalous Lightning is really just like a relationship song. I guess. I think it's about, you know, struggling to find a balance between your aspirations for career and your relationship aspirations. You know, it's a pretty universal idea. You know, I hope that's not too corny for you. If it is, just like, you know, just leave. Just go away. It's okay. It's all good. It is corny, let's be honest. Let's stop the podcast. Just kidding. But yeah, so I think that's what that's about. It's sort of like, you know, what is my career goals? And it's like, am I just serving my own ego by trying to, like, you know, push myself and make these sacrifices in life, yada, yada, yada. You know, and essentially, this is not a, you know, it's a fictional story. You know, the narrator is in Nashville. He's a Nashville musician now. He left. I've never wanted to live in Nashville. I love Nashville, but I don't want to really go there and live there. I do love it there. Oh, it's great. But so yeah, it's fictional, but it's birthed out of that feeling, right? So yeah, it's just kind of funny how, not even subject matter wise, I think it's interesting how a piece of music can stick around for years, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I gotta work it. I gotta work it. I gotta work it. And I beat the living hell out of this song until I found ooh, that was bad. So that kind of gave that, like, that drag feel before the bah. And Tony was so funny. Tony, the engineer, co-producer with me on the record. He's so funny. I was just like, I'm going to record all this stuff. Probably not going to use it. You know, I think it recorded like 12-string electric, acoustic, 12, you know, 6-string electric, some lead stuff, and like a ton of backing vocals. And Tori Quinn, a.k.a. Vequency, she sang on the chorus of this tune and some stuff on the verse. And I was like, yeah, Tony, I don't know, man. I'm just going to record all this stuff and probably won't all be on there. And he was like inspired by like, I think he was like challenged that by that. And he was like, I'm going to find space for all of this shit. And he totally did. I wouldn't have been able to do that. I would have had to like simplify it or something. So Tony, you're the man, dude, for finding the space for all that stuff. And you can really soak it in if you have the headphones on. Anyways, this podcast is still ongoing. We've got the record coming out April 16th. If you want to go to fireinthefieldmusic.com, you know, we've got all our digital music out there for sale on the website. We've got vinyls of this record, Resurrect, I'm talking about. We've got 100 left. We got 200, 100 are gone, and then we got 100 left, so get them. I'll ship it to you for real in the mail. Yeah. So here we go. Title track, Resurrect. Why this? I just love that Resurrect is the seventh track. You know, it's got that weird sort of like symbology thing going on. Symbology? I don't think that's the word. Numerology? You know what I'm saying, right? Resurrection, number seven. It's all that, you know, the seventh son kind of shit, whatever. Anyways, that's why it had to be track seven. So yeah, Resurrect. Here we go, the title track. Super simple riff. You know, pocket rock. This is the title track because of the way this song was born. Period. Plain and simple. It's everything that I love about music in one process, and that is Starlight in Southbridge, Massachusetts. Massachusetts. The sun's directly in my eyes now. It's throwing me off. We used to play there all the time, you know, before there was a pandemic, and it's just a great place to play. If you go to the fireinthefieldmusic.com, you go to Field Notes, and you look at the second blog post, you'll kind of get a more detailed rundown of what this place really is all about and how they harbor and foster artists. And it's a real community vibe, which is kind of what everyone sort of totes and promotes and claims to be, right? But like, this place walks the walk, and it's amazing when you find the real thing. It really is an amazing thing. You feel free. You feel welcome. You feel like people are actually listening, and they are, because they're good people. They're great people. They're all my dear friends now. So thank you, Starlight. Thank you, Dimitri. All you folks. Seriously, you know who you are. Freaking love you. Anyways, flashback to the band that was supposed to be on the record. Fuck. We were on that stage, Starlight stage, and we're just, you know, freewheeling it. I'll give some kudos to James McCallis being in the audience. Whenever he's there, I always, like, will do some stupidly daring shit. Yeah. So I forget what song we had played. I had broken a string on my Gibson, and I had my my Telecaster in front of me. I put my Telecaster on to play. And so we were playing a few tunes with the Tele. I feel really at home on that guitar for whatever. Well, I mean, I've had it since I was 17, I think. So I forget what tune we had just finished. And I was just kind of looking out there. It wasn't like it was crazy packed or anything like that. So we were just kind of experimenting a little bit, letting the jams go, which people seem to enjoy. So, okay. And then I was just started playing that riff on my own. Why did I start playing that riff? I don't know. I just started playing that. I'm not special. This is not magic. All musicians do this. Everyone does this, I think, who plays in bands. It's just a matter of like, oh, this is cool. Let's do some. Can we do something with this? Let's do something with this. Yeah. So then I just turned and kind of looked at Brad, and he just obviously he just like makes the stank face, and he's just like already. He's just like yum. He's ready to go. And then I look over at Jeff, and Jeff's like yep. Let me. He's plucking it out. He's following me. And he's like, oh, yep, I got the riff. And then, because it's, you know, whatever. It's not too complex, obviously, at all. And we literally just go into this jam. And people think it's a song. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to sing something then. And the first thing I said was, baby walk. Walks right down to the swampland. Baby talk. Talks right to my heart. And when I move, she moves, she say, not yet, don't go. When, you know, that's what I sang. And then the next thing I played, Jeff and Brad stayed on the main riff. I added this lead part in the moment. Whatever that was, right? It was a little different from what I forget exactly what I played in the moment. It was something similar to what's on the record, but the record is a little bit more defined. For sure. But it was weird. Luckily, I had my Zoom recorder up, the one that I'm actually recording on right now. And I knew that was a special jam after we finished. And I went back and listened to it, and I was like, man, that's cool. We should make a song out of that. Call it something ridiculous. And yeah, so I actually forgot about it for a while, and then I found it, and then I was like, all right, this is going to be a song. Let's make it. And even though I had spitballed and improvised all these lyrics and this whole sort of story about, it's another sort of relationship song about whatever. You can make up your own. It's for you to decide. I'm not going to spoon feed it. Not this one. Yeah, so I tried to change the lyrics initially. Listening back, I got the music down from the live recording. I was like, great. All right, so I'm going to come up with a subject similar to like Egyptian Jukebox, right? I was like, I'm going to come up with a separate subject entirely and write a story to this. And I kept doing, and I came up with like three different sets of lyrics. And none of them made sense to the music. It was just like, I'm killing the original seed, right? I'm killing this moment. And I was like, well, let me just go back to the recording and see what I actually said out loud. So what I did is I just listened back, and I literally just wrote down exactly what I said in the original recording. Some of it made sense. A lot of it didn't. But there was a thread, right? There was some sort of narrative about resurrection, coming back to life from being, you know, broken and heartache kind of thing, you know, something like that. And then I was like, boom, okay. All right, there. Well, I see the thread. Okay. So once I saw that, I was like, it wasn't that hard to manipulate the lyrics to have a flow to them. So sometimes it's funny. It's like, you think you've got to do all this work. Like, no, I need to come up with an entirely new set of lyrics, but I didn't at all. I needed to go back to what the original idea was about and harvest really the essence of that and boil it down. And that's what, there you go, you know? So I named it Resurrect, and it's like, obviously that's a pretty big, powerful word. It's a loaded word, right? And then come time to naming the album, you know, I had a million different ideas, and I was spitballing around with John over the phone after we were talking about how the mixes were coming out. And I was like, you know, Resurrect. And immediately John was just like, ooh, I like that. I like that. Like, just like the way he said it, you know, he was like, I like that. I like that. you know, like the way he said it, I could kind of, because I've known him forever, I could kind of tell, like, okay, this makes some sort of sense to him. Does it make sense to me? You know? And it did. It really, quote unquote, kind of tied it all together, because the next track is called Walked on Water. Anyway, so that's what's so great about just working with other people, the collaborative process. It's like, you know, because you're stuck inside your own body, right? You're stuck inside your own brain. And when you throw something out and you know someone really well and you see how it resonates with them and they throw it back at you, boom. Good things happen, you know? Go forth and create. Anyways, this next track was also in the spirit of talking about collaboration. Another older Fire in the Field riff. Yeah. And older lyrics, too. Anyways, so that band I was talking about earlier, Miss Fairchild, the band that Joe Beth would play drums in sometimes. I joined this band when the original guitar player went out to L.A. for a musicology degree. Amazing musician. Like, when I got to meet with these guys, I was like, I don't know if I can be in this band. Like, they, like, know stuff about music. I'm just, like, hacking away here. You know? I'm like a pentatonic hack machine. So joining Miss Fairchild was, like, incredibly instrumental, no pun intended, in sort of propelling me forward and, like, trying to figure out more about music and just dive deeper and deeper. So Skylar is that dude that helped me work out. Well, he worked out, walked on water with me. It was a dark and stormy night in Somerville, Massachusetts. I actually don't know exactly what the weather was in Somerville, but we were at who's a singer of Miss Fairchild. We were at his apartment, and Skylar and I were just talking about guitar, playing acoustic guitars, and, you know, he's like, you've been working on any music? And I actually don't know exactly why we started working on the song, but we did. And I showed him this, you know, this narrative that I had. I had a bunch of lyrics centered around Walked on Water. I had that guitar riff, and then we just started working, man. And he's such a good songwriter, and he was, you know, he's like kind of the arranger of Miss Fairchild. He was very much the guy, sort of, you know, he was like writing the horn parts and like sort of like dictating to the band, you know, how the music was, you know, pieced together. So it was really great to work with him, and he really brought that thing to life, man. Really brought that thing to life. Because I didn't think it, you know, necessarily I would figure out how to do it. And he really, that collaboration was huge. I changed that part. That little turnaround, like he came up with something. And I honestly, it was probably, I forget what it was. You know, by the time I went to record the song, I was like, I don't remember what little. I actually can't remember the one that I played right now. But yeah, so that got changed. Some things got changed. And we actually used to play this song out as a band in around 2015 to 2016 when we had a different lineup in the band. So that was one of those, you know, an older Fire in the Field song. It's on the record now. True confession, I didn't know if I wanted to put this one on the record. But Tony Hamawi made me do it, the engineer. So thank Tony if you like the song. If you don't like it, it's Tony's fault. Okay? All right, cool. Man, this is a long episode, huh? Are you still here? Are you okay? Like, shouldn't you be listening to a podcast that's like more popular? / do you have a job? Hey, man, go to fireinthefieldmusic.com and you can order a vinyl record of this album that I'm talking about, Resurrect. You can hit me up at mike@fireinthefieldmusic.com if you'd like to rap about anything. Seriously, I'm around. Anyways, the next track, Stay Back Wolf, is really kind of like the album ender. You know, it's like the epic last track kind of deal. And I knew Santarelli would absolutely be the John Bonham vibe, do the John Bonham vibe, and absolutely murder the song, which he does, of course. It's a meat log of a song, you know. It's a wad, for sure. In terms of how it came together, this was more traditional in the sense that, you know, okay, I have a riff that I like. That's in the wrong key. And, you know, I just loved that this it's simple, almost like Resurrect. Dun, dun. Just give it to me straight, you know? And then, yeah. There are those first inversion chords that I love so much. And then a second inversion, E. Man, it's been so long since I even tried playing that. That's really weird. I miss playing music. Holy cow. With people. I had a jam with one of my students and his dad the other day. I teach this one kid drums and his dad guitar. We actually had like a pretty sick jam. I was like, can we do this again next week, please? I need this, guys. Yeah, so Stay Back Wolf is really about just this, the notion that no matter who you are, you can be an innocent looking person. You can be a beautiful woman. You could be any walk of life. Power can still corrupt the shit out of you. Right? I mean, we see it all the time. See it everywhere, every day. Power corrupting your better sense of what should be done. So again, that notion of, you know, like kind of like in Boss Man, like that notion of exploitation comes to mind, where people feel the need to exploit or condemn others for their own benefit. And the only thing that I personally don't like about this song is the fact that I play into the notion of like wolf as like a negative thing, whereas like wolves are like amazing animals, and I would never want to equate a power hungry douchebag like Donald Trump or, you know, some scum sucking motherfucking piece of shit like Rudy Giuliani with an amazing animal like a wolf. I'm just playing on that. I'm playing on that stereotype. But please, don't hate wolves. Don't hate wolves. Wolves rule, man. Wolves are amazing. Protect the wolves. Save the wolves. But you humans who are, you know, metaphorical wolves, get the fuck away from me. Please. They're not going to listen. If I say please, come on. Oh, you said, yeah, never mind. Okay. I feel the rage bubbling up. No. The last track, Start Again, honestly is another song. This was a collaboration of a different kind. I was dating someone at the time, and she was kind of in the music world, not a musician, but loves music. We were listening. She wanted to hear some stuff that I was working on, and I was just kind of let her go through my voice memos, which is a really weird idea because I definitely like record shit that nobody should ever hear on my voice memos. But I was like, yeah, whatever. Just go through it. See if you find anything that's good. And she put this one thing on, and it was like immediately I just got really, really embarrassed, to be honest. It was just like that singer-songwritery thing. I honestly can't remember how to play it on guitar. It's in some weird tuning. I gotta figure it out again. Oh shit. Whoops. But yeah, so anyways, she heard it and she was like, wow, I really like this. And I was like singing all like, you know, bad. And I was like, oh, but it was a super vulnerable performance. I think, it was like, you know, the first time I stumbled across it and she heard it and she was like, what? Like, I love that. I really like this. I was like, yeah, stop it. Don't turn it off. You know, but she was right. There was something in there. So it's all thanks to you, that song was created. So thank you. Yeah. And that was Start Again. And that was just me and acoustic guitar. And that's the 10 tracks of this album that is coming out on streaming on Friday, April 16th. I would just like to say to, you know, everyone who's helped me get through this album, freaking love you guys. Freaking love it. Seriously, I gotta give like every kudo that I could give to Tony Hamaui, my dear friend, engineer, co-producer on the album. He was with me really every step of the way. Because remember, like, we went into this project thinking, okay, we've got a band that's been playing together, right? We have a band that's going to go into the studio and play this album. Then we didn't have the band. And I said, we're going to go forth and continue this project. And Tony was sort of like, wait, what? How? Huh? You want to use two drummers? Dude, don't do that to me. Two drummers. I'm like, dude, there's only so much time. I got to have this drummer learn these songs and put his style on it. I got to have this drummer learn her songs and put her style on it. And I will rehearse with both of them. And then I'm going to play bass on it too because the bass player is gone. So it was like this mad, mad rush. And Tony totally stuck with me the whole time and listened to my insane ideas. So Tony, you're the man. Whatever you do to make me sound better than I am, thank you, brother. What a great mix, man. He took some risks on some of the mixes. He didn't go follow like traditional pathways of like, okay, we're gonna just go with the standard pan pan boom boom boom. You know, he had some really cool creative ideas. I love you, dude. Okay. Secondly, the two drummers, man, Joe Beth and John, like the record wouldn't exist if they weren't like, yeah, I'll record some music on a Fire in the Field album. I mean, John was Fire in the Field for so long with me. So it's not like, it wasn't that big of a stretch, but it was like, you know, John's a super busy dude. He's got a family. It's like, dude has a crazy life. And he's like, yes, I'm recording on this. Hell yeah. And he totally crushed it. Joe Beth, you know, she's got a life too. She's super busy. You know, she's in demand. She's an in-demand musician. She was like, hey, I'm going to come. I'll come play with you on this shit. And she crushed it. This wouldn't exist without you guys. Thank you. Yeah. Tori, Quinn, thank you for bringing that soulful to it, man. Ugh. You'll hear her voice on some of the tracks. Yeah, she just totally brings that soul thing, man. It elevates it, you know, it elevates it. Ugh, we got to do a show together someday and have that, your voice in there. Be beautiful. You know her as Frequency, Boston-based artist Frequency. Glam disco, funky, good pop music. I actually play a little bit on one of her albums, too. Oh, man. Who else? Nick Sampiello. Nick, what up, dude? I don't even really know Nick that well. He's just like this smart dude that sort of like walks around New Alliance Recording and has all this crazy gear. And he's just like always kind of like, yeah, man, like bubbly and happy and talking about stuff and music. And he mastered this record. He mastered it for vinyl and he mastered it for, you know, digital. I think that's it. I think that covers it. Wait a second. No shit. Back up. Stop. Hold the phone. Can we talk about Jacqueline Tommaso Rosa, please? So yeah, Jackie is one of my dear friends from college days. This piece of art, she's a visual artist, right? You can follow her on Instagram at JackTom13 or just shoot me a message and ask me who she is if you want to see more of her artwork, and I can send you her links if you like the album cover to this. This is something that she made that she titled Can You Dig It a few years ago. It won an award in Providence, Rhode Island, which is where she's living now. But yeah, this is an award-winning piece of artwork, folks, that's on our album cover, okay? So I love everything that she does. Everything, it just blows me away every time. I'm just like, how do you, huh? What? You know, I have like really, I have real emotional reactions to her work. You know, it's powerful stuff, and she's just amazing. Please, if you're interested in seeing more of her work, let me know, and I will get you in touch or give you a link. But yeah, so it's funny how things come together like this, because Jackie and I are always kind of spitballing, you know, about art, life, and stuff back and forth. And it was when I was on the phone with John, the Santarelli, the drummer, right? And he was like, "Oh, I like the title Resurrect." Pretty much immediately when he said, "I like that," and I was like, okay. I was like, well, if it was called Resurrect, what would be the cover? There was no other image that came into my mind other than what Jackie had, that piece that she made, Can You Dig It? No other image came into my mind, and I couldn't unsee it. Once I saw that as the cover, I could not unsee it. So, you know, just don't question it at that point. You know, it's like, well, that's the idea then. She shouldn't let me put this on an album cover, but she did. Thank you, Jackie. You really should get in touch with me about her, because you need to see the whole thing. It's a giant painting that she did. It's huge. There's more to it. It's not square, so it didn't fit on the vinyl. So we had to crop it, and it looks the way it looks now. But you should see the whole thing. It's awesome. Absolutely awesome. Yeah, so it just... That really just like tied the room together, because I want it to be contradictory. I wanted it to be beautiful and challenging at the same time. And Jackie's painting makes it that. You know what I mean? I don't know if you know what I mean. Beautiful and challenging. Thanks to Jackie that became the reality of the record. Yeah. Totally. It's loaded. You know what I mean? It's like when you look at an album cover like that and the title's called Resurrect, that's a loaded fucking piece of music right there. You know? That's how I feel right now. Loaded. I'm fucking loaded. Just kidding. I'm actually wide awake at like 6 a.m. with one cup of coffee. I think it's time for the second cup of coffee. Folks, I miss you all. I love you all. My name's Mike. This has been Mike in the Field. Head to fireinthefieldmusic.com for more. Get ready, folks. This record, Resurrect, comes out in 2 days. April 16th, folks. April 16th. Get it on your streaming service of choice. If you use Spotify, fine. If you use Tidal, great. If you use Apple Music, cool. If you use Deezer, I seriously want to meet you. Seriously. Like, if you use Deezer, like, I want to have you on the podcast. I'll let you come to the next, you know, 10 Fire in the Field shows for free. Seriously, if you ever want to have a conversation, just send me an email, Mike@fireinthefieldmusic.com. We'll do it up. Peace out.